In 1973, the average American home was just over 1,500 square feet. Today, the average size is almost 2,600. For a long time, when it comes to houses, we have believed that bigger is better. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Some people are pushing back against the trend toward larger houses. This hour, the small house movement. I'll talk with Jay Schaefer, owner of Four Lights Houses and author of the Small House book. I'll talk with Greg Johnson, president of the Small House Society. They've both been living in tiny houses for many years. Don Otto of DPO Construction in Iowa City will also be here. He's a green builder and believes in building homes without wasted space. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. When new houses go up, they tend to be big. Bigger houses on bigger lots with bigger garages. In 1973, the average American home was about 1,500 square feet. About 40 years later, the average house is almost 2,600 square feet. Not everyone is on board with this trend. This hour, we'll talk about the small house movement. Jay Schaefer is the founder of the movement. He built his first tiny house in Iowa City 20 years ago. He's the owner of Four Lights Houses and the author of the Small House book. Hello, Jay.
Hi there. It's good to be back in Iowa.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here today. And Greg Johnson is also with us. He was the first person that Jay built a house for. He lives in Iowa City and is president of the Small House Society. Hello, Greg.
Hi, good to be here.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being here today. And Jay, take us back about 20 years. Where did this idea come from?
Well, it really came out of necessity, like all good ideas, I guess. I needed a place, and I couldn't afford the standard house, new housing being so large at the time, and getting larger every day. So I decided I was going to pare down to what I needed and nothing more. And nothing has ever made me any happier than that, knowing what I need and getting rid of the rest of the crap.
Well, and okay, it came out of necessity, but this is a little beyond where most people go out of necessity. What made you want to go farther than say, hey, you know what, I'll just rent a small apartment, I'll live there for a while, I'll save up my money, do what most people do?
Well, actually, I had tried that for a while, and I actually got fed up with paying rent, the idea of giving away my money with nothing in return in the long run. It's actually not that bad an idea. I just didn't like it. I wanted I guess I have a thing about home. I just needed a very strong sense of home, not the bank's home, but my home, and not my landlord's home either.
So tell me about the first little house you built.
Oh, yeah, that's, you know, I should mention I lived in an Airstream trailer just 6 miles north of Iowa City for about 2 years. In a hayfield, and after living without insulation for a couple winters in Iowa, I decided I'd build my own little house from scratch on wheels. I'd gotten used to that idea, and so I built this thing. It's very traditional looking, with the traditional proportions of a classic house, vernacular style, pitched roof, porch, very Iowa.
And about how many square feet was that house?
Oh, yeah, I guess that would be kind of important, too. It looked like every other Iowa home, except it was about 100 square feet.
Okay. Try to put that in perspective for us. 100 square feet. What would that compare to in a normal house? Would that be my kitchen?
Well, it depends on your kitchen. But, you know, I think the easiest way for me to define it, as I'm sitting here, it's about the size of an SUV. So I was living in something that would fit in one parking spot.
Okay, so smaller than my kitchen, and did you have a loft in there for a sleeping space to try to maximize the space that you had?
Yeah, that opens up the space a lot because beds take up so much square footage, generally speaking. So I put that one above my head. Up there in a little sleeping loft with a ladder leading up. That was very cozy. Turns out it stays warmer up there at night. in the winter, and you can open the windows in the summer. So that was a happy accident, too.
And what else was in the house?
Oh, let's see. You know, I pared it down to a, well, I call it an elbow room now, but it's really just a living room, basic living area. And off of that, I had a bathroom and a kitchen, and then there was the sleeping loft. And those things contain the basic items that you would expect to find in a bathroom and a kitchen and a sleeping area, a bed in the sleeping area, toilet and shower in the bathroom, and refrigerator, sink, and cooking thing, like range inside of the kitchen.
Where did you park this little house?
Oh, my. Now you're getting into the sticky questions. I designed and built it for myself up north of Iowa City, just where my Airstream had been. And then when it came time, you know, I really wanted to move into town again because it seemed I was trying to live simply, sustainably, and yet I was driving 6 miles each way every day to come into town and do my thing. So when I tried to get into town with this little house on wheels, it turns out, you know, zoning laws, which I was unaware of, actually, at that time, they won't allow you to just pull your house into town and buy any old lot and live on it, you know, in a residential neighborhood. I would have to live in the trailer park on the edge of town, which wasn't that much closer to downtown, really, than where I'd been before. So I bought a tiny house, a small house, not tiny, but a 300-ish square foot house on Dewey Street. And I put my house in the backyard. And it turns out I could camp out in my own RV, so to speak, as much as I wanted. So I camped out for 5 years straight and rented out the larger house.
All right. Now, Greg was the first person you built a house for. Greg, when did you become aware of Jay's idea about small houses?
It would have been in the year 2000. I'd seen a front story article in the Des Moines Register that showed a picture of Jay's house, and I'd never seen anything like that. You know, traditional home, but shrunken down and put on wheels. And so I was fascinated by the story and clipped it out and then also put it on my website at the time and started getting a lot of emails and phone calls from people wanting to contact Jay. And so after about a year of this went by, I thought, you know, I really have an obligation to try to find out who this guy is and how these people can reach him, because it was sort of increasing. People were wanting to find out more about this tiny house. And so anyway, I went ahead and tracked him down and met him in 2001, and we kept in touch for about, you know, a year or so. And then in 2002, we founded this small house society.
What appealed to you about this little house?
Well, I had also been living in tiny spaces. For a few years, I'd been living in efficiency apartments and enjoyed the simplicity of that. But as Jay mentioned, I also was feeling like, you know, why am I spending this money on something that it's small enough? I should be able to build a house of this size. And I had at that time figured out a way to kind of wake up in the morning, and in the efficiency apartment I was in prior to living in the tiny house, I was sharing an upstairs with some other grad students. And so, you know, you'd have to wait in line for the shower in the morning, and it wasn't quite as convenient as I would have wanted. And so in the mornings, I'd start going to the gym to start my day. And I thought, well, if I'm going to the gym anyway, because somebody's in the bathroom in the morning, you know, I might as well just live in a tiny house, and then I own it. I don't have any more rent to pay and no mortgage to pay. And the tiny house that we built, that Jay built and I helped with, ended up being slightly larger than my efficiency apartment, which was a 10 by 12 room, you know, 120 square feet, which sounds big for an apartment. But when you start talking about houses that are 140 square feet, that sounds very tiny, you know. So it's partly just the words we use to define things.
Right. I don't know that that sounds big for an apartment, but maybe it did to you. So did you have a shower in your little house, or did you continue thinking, well, I'll just go to the gym and shower every day?
Well, one thing I'd noticed when I've been in small spaces, whether it's a cabin or an RV or other tight space, is that, you know, when you take a shower in the morning, the whole room fills up with steam, and the windows have steam, and then, you know, in the wintertime, that it's even worse, and then you get mold and stuff. And I thought, you know, I don't really want to have the steam from cooking on the stove or showering in the morning inside of a small space. So I decided not to have those things, and I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the simplicity of essentially being off the grid, not just off the electric grid, but off of the running water grid and sewage as well. And so that routine of mine, I kept going. And the university, of course, University of Iowa, has a plentiful number of fitness centers you can go to. And so I would start my day with a workout and then shower and get into my clothes and go to work for the day. And I work at the University of Iowa as a tech support person. So for, you know, 6 years, that's what I was doing.
Where did you park your tiny house?
Well, that's kind of a story in itself. But yes, I ended up parking it near the law school. And for people who are unfamiliar with Iowa City, it would be, you know, kind of near the hospital in a typical residential area, but older part of the city. And my dad has a home there with quite a bit of land in the backyard. So there was room to put a tiny house in the yard, which I suppose people thought was just a garden shed or something. But eventually, yeah, somebody did complain about it. Not a neighbor, somebody from 5 miles away complained because they just thought it wasn't fair that I'd be able to live in a tiny house. So the city had to come over and make an assessment of whether or not this was even legal to have a tiny house sitting in a yard. And there is a law that states you cannot have a tiny house near the front yard, which it's a corner property, so there were two front yards. But long story short, the city allowed me to move it on the other side of the yard, and they declared that that would be okay. And as I say, there are more details to that, but basically, yeah, the city approved it for my use, and that's where it stayed.
So you said you lived in this tiny house for 6 years?
Yeah, from 2003, Jay and I worked on it in the summer of 2003, and then that August through August of 2009, I lived in that 10-by-7 house with an upstairs loft. So I guess you could say it was a 140 square feet.
So, and how large is the house you live in today, Greg?
Well, my wife and I, after I got married, my wife and I moved into 360 square feet for a couple of years. And right now we're sort of between homes. We found an apartment on the west side of town, and it's about 1,000 square feet, which seems huge by small house standards, but still is, you know, less than half the size of an average home.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the small house movement this hour. With me, Jay Schaefer. He's the founder of the movement. He built his first tiny house in Iowa City about 20 years ago. He's the owner of Four Lights Houses and the author of the Small House book and some other publications as well. Greg Johnson is here. He was the first person Jay built a house for. He lives in Iowa City and is president of the Small House Society. We'll continue this conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the small house movement. For many, many years, for centuries, in fact, the trend in the United States has been toward larger and larger homes. Some people are pushing back, and some people are pushing way back. Jay Schaefer is one of those people. He's founder of the Small House Movement and owner of Four Lights Houses, also author of the Small House book and a number of other books. Greg Johnson is here as well. He is the president of the Small House Society. And also, I want to welcome into the conversation Don Otto of DPO Construction in Iowa City. He's also pushing back, just not quite as far back as my other guests. He's a green builder and believes in building homes without wasted space. Hello, Don.
Good morning, Charity. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here today. And you are not going to the same extreme as both Jay and Greg, but you have tried not to participate in the trend toward ever larger homes as a builder. What was it that you saw that made you want to do things differently?
I think it's responsibility. I just hate wasting anything. You know, I'll even go around the job site picking up nails and screws or making sure that cardboard is recycled and metal and all of that. And I just think if we can be very comfortable in a certain size, why spend more than you really need to achieve that goal?
So when you look around at so many houses being built bigger and bigger, what kinds of spaces do you see that just kind of make you shake your head?
I have a hard time being judgmental about that. I think people really need to be respected for their lifestyle. I'm not going to go out and tell them, no, you can't build a house any larger than this or that, you know, whatever. And I think as long as I can find out what the owner really needs the space to do for them, let's see if we can design a space that'll work for them, but not build any more than you need to achieve that goal.
So a lot of the houses that we see built will have grand entranceways, mm-hmm. things like that, where you see mm-hmm. a lot of space vertically that is open. Mm-hmm. It mm-hmm. looks lovely. There's a lot of light. Mm-hmm. But that kind of space is a real energy sink, isn't it?
Well, it can be. But I think the front of the house especially is your public side. It's what welcomes people to your home. And so if you can create something that looks inviting and represents the way you feel about your home, I think that's perfectly fine to put some volume into it or just make it look very welcoming.
When you are talking with someone who wants to build a home, mm-hmm. What kind of process do you go through to talk about the space that they want and the space that they need?
Well, I work with a client and a designer, and before we even find out or ask them how many bedrooms do you need or that, we try to find out what they need the house to do for them. And then we'll come up with a floor plan and space planning. And then once we do that, then we'll try to shrink it down to the minimum size that'll still meet all of those needs. So we just don't spend any more than we need to achieve the goals.
Is that a challenge for people?
Oh, it can be. You know, people always say, well, what if? Or what if we do this and what if we do that? But that's really part of the process. It's a large expenditure of money, and we want to make sure we spend it wisely.
Can you give me an example of a way that you've really been able to benefit someone by saying, hey, let's look at this space and let's think about what we really need here?
Absolutely. A few years ago, we were designing a home, and during the design phase, we came up with a plan that started out being roughly 28 feet by 40 feet. Well, we found out that if we could shave 4 feet off the main floor to bring it down to 28 feet by 36 feet, we could save them a little over 100 square feet per floor. Well, it had a basement. It had a second floor. So if we add up those 300 square feet, multiply that by even $100 a square foot, which is like for a living or family room cost, we were able to save them over $30,000. At least $30,000. Well, all of a sudden, now you can afford a geothermal system and an energy recovery ventilation system at no additional cost, I mean, within the same budget. So why wouldn't you want to do that?
You have been involved in green building for a long time. I've heard people say that really the greenest house is one that's already built. How do you weigh that decision over renovating a space that already exists and making it as green as you possibly can and building something new?
Well, it depends on how the house was built, the one that's already sitting there. Given that a house we hope is going to last for at least 100 years, I like to think that mine will last even longer. But, when you look at the energy that a house is going to consume over 1 year or, you know, a month or a year or its lifespan, that amounts to a lot. And we're certainly very concerned about global warming, about the carbon dioxide emissions right now. So when you look at the big picture, it's a significant number.
I want to open up the phones. We're talking about the Small House Movement this hour. With me, Jay Schaefer, founder of the Small House Movement, author of the Small House book and some other publications. Greg Johnson is here. He's president of the Small House Society. And Don Otto of DPO Construction in Iowa City. You're welcome to join our conversation as well. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is an idea that really captures a lot of people's imagination. Do you think that you could live in 150 square feet or 300 square feet? What appeals to you about this idea? Do you have questions? 866-780-9100. And Jay, this is an idea that has really captured a lot of people's imagination. And I know you've had a lot of people asking you for ideas on how can I build my own tiny house and that kind of thing. Why do you think people get so excited about this?
Well, I think for one thing, we have been stuck in the bigger is better paradigm for so long that it's refreshing to see something that's actually based on necessity, like use value over resale value. And I think in nature, you know, everything's efficient. You know, nothing exists for no reason whatsoever. It seems like the only realm outside of that is the human ego. Drive for money or prestige or whatever. And so when we see a house that's literally designed for human needs just to keep a person happy and comfortable, I think that's appealing. It's almost like a portrait of self in lumber. Whatever that person's needs are, what the house is going to be, and it's going to reflect them.
Now, over the years, Jay, your needs have grown because your family has grown. You have two sons. How large is the house you live in now?
Well, I've been living in a 500-square-foot house for about 5 years now because I got married, had a couple of boys, a cat, and I never could really get rid of the tiny house either, so that's in the backyard. So 600 square feet total with the 100-square-foot house, which I call my house. It makes a big difference in terms of I've got a little private space. The 500 square feet feels a lot smaller than the 100 when you've got the two little kids running around.
Sure. Well, I can imagine. And Greg, I'd love for you to weigh in because I know you've lived in very small spaces with your wife. I mean, what are some of the living in a very, very small space by yourself is different from living in a very small space with someone else. What are some of the challenges that you've faced because of that? Jay, I'll let you start.
Well, when it comes to cohabitating with somebody else in a small space, it really does help, like I already implied, to have a private area for each member of the household. I think even if it's just a closet-sized little nook, you know, where a person can feel like they've got their solitary space for thinking and being alone or whatever, or for that matter, just the great outdoors, considering the outside as your living room.
All right. Well, and you live in California, which makes the outside a much more welcoming living space than, say, Iowa in January, right?
True. Although when I lived in Iowa, I did, oddly enough, I got outside a lot in the middle of winter. I guess you do that when you live in 100 square feet. I guess you get better clothes or something like that. But, yeah, and I should mention that Greg was smart enough. I should actually say, hi, Greg. I miss you. I haven't talked to you in a long time. But Greg was smart enough to add to the Small House Society website in the first paragraph, I believe it was, that our definition of tiny house is just any house, like Don said, any house in which all the square footage is used well for the needs of the perceived needs of the occupants. Which is a nice way to put it, because there's really no argument against it, I think.
The living in that smaller space with someone else, I mean, not just small children. I can imagine the challenges there. And you haven't done it with teenagers yet, right? So I can imagine that there are some challenges possibly on the horizon. But Greg, maybe you can weigh in just as a couple living in that small a space together. How does that change your dynamic?
Well, it's certainly, I think, it's a self-imposed minimalism, and it brings you closer together because you're sharing spaces and you need to cooperate more. It helps if you have a lot of things in common in terms of your preferences of how things are organized or even, you know, what brand of toothpaste do you use? You know, if you can kind of agree on, I know that sounds silly, like using the same shampoo brand or whatever, that reduces your material possessions in half of what it would be for two people. But that is part of the challenge that you hear about these tiny houses on wheels that are 100, 200, 300 square feet. And that works well for one or two people if they're the right match, you know. But for a family, if you start looking at per capita square footage required, then certainly, you know, if there are four or five people living under one roof, it's just going to need to be larger. People need their space, and you know, somebody's sleeping while someone else is getting up early and exercising, so you need those extra rooms.
Let's go to the phones. Jennifer's on the line in Deweyville at 866-780-9100. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. Greetings, Jay, from your old home in Deweyville. I live in the second smallest house in Deweyville. and I was wondering if any of you guys had ever thought of building a kind of development in Iowa City for small houses, because we would love to see that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I have. I've been thinking about that one ever since I built my first small house. Small houses work really well in concert with each other because, you know, if you've got shared amenities like a common house that's just a little larger or a lot larger than the small houses, you've got private space for the individuals, and then you've got, you know, if you want to share laundry facilities and a lawnmower and have your nightclub for 40 in the common house rather than in every single household. I would love to do one in Iowa City. I think, you know, I've probably seen tiny house villages on every lot I've ever driven by that where it would work. So thanks for that question, Jennifer. I bet you know that I dream about these things.
So what would be the difference in your mind about having a tiny house village as opposed to an apartment complex with a common area?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question, because really, when it comes down to it, an apartment complex is more efficient in terms of energy savings and material savings in the construction process and whatnot, because you're sharing walls. But there's just such a demand for freestanding housing in America, especially, and abroad, actually, that market is always going to exist. So the apartment thing is totally paralleling the small house movement, in that cities are now allowing for small apartments again as of late. But so they're not really separate. I think they're the same thing. Just the movement itself. In fact, it's all kind of like the Occupy with curb appeal.
Well, I want to ask you, Don, because this idea of building a small house community is very tricky, because there are laws that dictate the square footage that a home can be. And so in Iowa City, because that's where you're most knowledgeable, what are the limits?
Well, the Iowa City code, I think, is fairly generous, but it's something like the floor plan, the house has to be at least 20 feet wide for 75% of its length. So if you multiply out average sizes, that translates into something about 400 square feet. But it also has to be on a permanent foundation, and it has to be hooked up to the Iowa City sewer and water. So those are the limits. 400 square feet is still fairly small.
Yes.
I mean, I would say that qualifies as a small or a tiny house. But still there are those restrictions. If you go into a development, they may have entirely different covenants. And often those houses are in the, let's say, 1,400 to 1,800 square foot range.
And why would a city need limits like that, do you think?
For planning for facilities, for transportation, utilities, streets, being able to serve a certain number of people. You know, how to best use the tax money.
Well, and I would guess that resale value on a very, very small house would be somewhat sketchy. This is something that people either really want or they really don't.
It could. And, you know, people really want to protect themselves against people who are just looking for the absolute least expensive way to put up a little bit of a temporary shelter and then maybe walk away from it.
How do you feel about those zoning rules, Jay?
You know, it's like Don says, they're really not as restrictive as I like to pretend they are sometimes. I guess I'm opposed to anything that opposes good, efficient design. It, ultimately, they prohibit the worst design and they prohibit the best design. I understand their purpose, but boy, it's frustrating as a designer when you're like, gosh, you know, I could really make this way better if I could cut off a foot here, but that would be illegal or against code. You know, that said, I should mention that most of the folks these days I've talked to in zoning departments and building code enforcers and whatnot, they love the small house ideas. They're just a bit, they're trapped by their own laws, like trying to atone for the sins of their forefathers at this point by backtracking them, or at least trying to find the loopholes along with the rest of us who are into this movement in order to allow for smaller spaces and high density areas. And I should say it was in Iowa City. I think the woman's name was Jan in the zoning or the building department. The Des Moines Register posed us as combative and like it was the department against me. But no, I've always worked with these folks, and people seem to understand the common sense behind this stuff.
We're talking about the small house movement this hour. With me, Jay Schaefer, founder of the movement, author of the Small House book. Greg Johnson, who lives in Iowa City in a small area. He's also president of the Small House Society. And Don Otto of DPO Construction in Iowa City. He is a green builder. You're welcome to join our conversation with your questions, with your experiences. Do you live in a tiny house? Let us know what it's like. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the small house movement. And with me, Jay Schaefer, founder of the movement, author of the Small House book, and owner of Four Lights Houses. He lives in California now, but this all started in Iowa City. Greg Johnson was the first person Jay built a house for. He lives in Iowa City and is president of the Small House Society. And Don Otto of DPO Construction in Iowa City is here. He is a green builder and believes in building homes without wasted space, although his homes are significantly larger than the ones we've been talking about with Jay and Greg. You are welcome to join the conversation as well. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Kevin is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Charity.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm living in a what I guess I consider a smaller home in Iowa City. I live in a 648-square-foot house that I was part of the building of it with just a local builder, just him and I, and it's working out great.
All right. And why did you make that decision?
Well, that's a great question. I was looking at a 1,600-square-foot house, which we had plans drawn up, and I would have had to get a mortgage in order to build that with the money I already had of $100,000. And being in my early 50s at the time, I just didn't feel like spending the rest of my years paying off a mortgage and not being able to do anything else. So we just went with the money I had on hand. And like I said, I was part of the building process, so that saved quite a bit of money. And I ended up with a nice little cozy home, I consider, right next to Hickory Hill Park up in the north end of Iowa City.
All right, Kevin. Thanks so much for sharing your experience.
I used to work with Jay down at Pioneer Co-op.
So was he your inspiration?
Oh. Well, yeah, I guess he was, actually, you know, because like I said, when I was looking to build the larger place, which I guess 1,600 square feet isn't all that much bigger than some of these houses, or, you know, it's not even...
Well, it's not as big as the average American house these days,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I know Jay had the house down on Dewey Street, and he actually, he gave me a little tour, the nickel tour of it, and...
Which probably didn't take too long, right?
Exactly. That's the same with my place here. But, so yeah, he was an inspiration.
Thank you.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for sharing your experience.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
And now, Jay, I know that the appeal of the tiny house was strong for you. Was it also partially the appeal of being able to do the work yourself and build something that you could live in?
Yeah. You know, I wasn't an architecture major. They don't have architecture majors, at least I don't think they do yet, in Iowa City. So I was an art major, and I'm really into the aesthetics, like the proportioning, actually sacred geometry and that sort of thing. So it was important to me to build something very much within my control of the aesthetics, the ethics, and, you know, the structure itself. Building it for me is not as exciting as designing it, but being too poor to afford other people to build them sometimes, I get in on that part as well.
And Don, now as a builder, what are some of the challenges that are created when people say, oh, I think I'll just build my own little house?
I welcome participation. I think that's wonderful. On the other hand, it needs to be integrated with the team. I like to work with some really wonderful subcontractors in Iowa City, in the Iowa City area. And to have someone different come in means that I need to learn, okay, how do you communicate with them best? What's the best way? What's the best time of day? Are they always going to be available? Are they able to do the work when we need them to have that part of the work done? So it's a challenge, but I designed and built my own home as well. And it's wonderful. It's a tremendous contribution to say, I built that, or I had a hand in building it. And I wouldn't want to deny anybody that pleasure.
The houses that you've built over the years, Jay, you've made some refinements to as far as insulation and making them as efficient as possible, right?
Yeah, it seems like as long as I really never set out to build a tiny house per se, you know, and I just called my first house company Tiny. I called it Tumbleweed Tiny House Company, and that is no longer my company, but I had to call it tiny because I looked at a catalog of small homes, and they were like, you know, 2,000 square feet and under, you know, some, all of them being over 1,800 square feet. And I just lost track of the question you just asked, Charity, but
I was asking about making them more energy efficient over time.
Oh, right.
What you've learned about that.
Thank you. You know, I just set out to build an efficient house, and I've learned so much. I actually am friends with a lot of building scientist types out here in California and efficiency geeks. So we geek out together on the best way to build a wall these days. And it really comes back to common sense, largely. And fortunately for me, that's really all I understand anyway. So I've been doing it pretty much right from the beginning. But you can always improve, and so I'm always building myself a new tiny house, maybe every 3 to 5 years, and selling the old ones.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Nate is on the line in Durant. Hey, Nate.
How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Well, you know, I'm listening to this. I love the show, and I love the idea, and then all of a sudden, it occurs to me that this week, I'm just thankful that my sister and my in-laws, where I'm going to be going for Thanksgiving, you know, have more than 500 square feet. And I'm kind of wondering how you deal with questions like hospitality when you have so little space. I'm just kind of interested in how you deal with that kind of stuff.
That's a great question, Nate. And Jay, I'll let you take that one first, and then Greg.
I personally go off to my relatives' houses because they're bigger. And you know, thank goodness not everybody's house is as small as mine, or at least it would be nice to have a shared common house. But traditionally, I'm not the one who invites the entire family, extended family, over for turkey dinner. I invite individuals over throughout the year, or we go outside and have parties during the summer.
Greg?
Yeah, I think that's a challenge that people face, not just in the sort of small house movement, but imagine, you know, somebody living in New York City in a 260 square foot efficiency apartment or in Iowa City for that matter. And you learn to socialize and meet with people in the public spaces that are available. So, you know, you get an event room reserved at a local restaurant, or, you know, if you're meeting with a some friends you might meet at a coffee shop downtown. So there are ways to socialize with people, but it's a different dynamic than just, you know, kicking back at home. It certainly is different in that way. And Jay had mentioned earlier that, you know, often there's the ideal of having a collection of tiny homes in a pocket neighborhood, for example, where you'd share an event, a central kind of shared facility where people can get together and have birthday parties or whatever it might be. But you don't need to own that. You know, if you think about it, maybe you have 3 or 5 events a year where there might be a family gathering. And okay, so you can rent that space 5 times a year, and the rest of the year you live in the space that you really need from day to day.
But Jay, you're a dad. What about play dates, having kids over?
Oh, well, you know, like you said earlier, I do live in California, so it's pretty easy to get outside almost any time of year, and that helps. But also, most of the other parents don't have teeny tiny houses or even something as small as 500 square feet. It seems like, well, you know, even then, we almost always go outside. And even in Iowa, I tended to go outside even in the winter. The kids just tend to, I don't know, they're tougher than I am when it comes to cold weather and any kind of weather.
Let's go back to the phones. Doug is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Doug. Doug, are you there? All right.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can.
Ah, sorry. Hi, Charity.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
I live in a tiny house in Iowa City. Hi, Greg and Jay.
Hey, Doug.
Hey.
I had a tiny house, open house. My sister had come to town, and we actually got, speaking of hospitality, we actually got 47 people into my tiny house.
How tiny is your tiny house?
It's 100 square feet, roughly 8 by 14.
They were all in there at the same time?
They were. We got a picture of it.
Like a clown car.
Yeah, it was a little bit crazy.
So how long have you been living in your tiny house, Doug?
Well, I built it 8 years ago, and I've been living in it off and on since then, and pretty much full-time over this past year. I built it out in the middle of some woods between Iowa City and the Amanas. And after my sister and I went and toured Jay's tiny house in Iowa City, and she built hers and moved into it immediately, something like 11 years ago. And I built mine shortly after and used it as a hermitage. I'm a Methodist pastor. And so I retreated, and others retreated to it, and I've been living in it full-time since I moved it into town, Iowa City, into the backyard of a house just a stone's throw from Dewey Street.
And do you live there alone?
I do.
How's it working for you?
I am loving it. I have a whole new appreciation of ice crystals here in the last few weeks. The way they form on my, I have a spare water jug that I haul water in and out with, and it sits on the front porch, and it turned it into a crystalline vase. It's beautiful.
All right. Well, Doug, thank you so much for sharing your experience.
Glad to do so.
Mary Jo is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Mary Jo.
Hi, I'm really enjoying this program. I'm sitting here with a big grin on my face because it sounds like you're doing a little commercial for Iowa City Co-Housing. You can find out about us at iowacitycohousing.org. We are a community of so far about 12 households. We're aiming for a total of 32. We'd like to have 16 signed up before we break ground in the spring. We've purchased property in Iowa City. It's just a mile and a half from downtown, and we're going to have smallish households with no guest rooms. The guest rooms will be in the common house with only one lawnmower, shared and resources.
Mary Jo, we don't actually do commercials on the show, but I think you've made your point about co-housing. And again, I guess that invites the question, Jay, there are so many different ways to do this. And of course, duplexes and townhouses and apartments have been ways over the years to bring people together to live in smaller spaces, to make living more efficient and more affordable. What is it about the tiny house that is just so incredibly appealing to you and to others? Because people are obsessed with these things. You see, you know, online, all kinds of people posting pictures and talking about the efficiencies and the interesting little ways that people make their lives work in these tiny spaces. What is it about them?
Well, I think they're a symbol of self and also a symbol of the world around us. You know, it's like the convergence of those things. And it, when you sum it up in very archetypal form with only that which is necessary, it really starts to feel like something very human. And for that matter, a small space in which everything is actually necessary to the life lived within, it just feels more alive. If everything in your immediate environment is actually working and actually for life, life itself feels more vibrant within, I think. And by the way, if anybody wants help designing villages, this is not an ad, but I would love to help. Not for money, but I want to see this thing take off like wildfire.
We have a tweet from Jess. My 768 square foot home is small, but not tiny. It was built in 1949 and is cute, affordable, and easier to maintain and fix than a McMansion, in her words. And Don, with the houses that you build and the houses that you work on, do you see that there's a sustainability there for the people who live in, and we're not talking about tiny homes, we're talking about reasonably sized, but smaller than some of the newer construction that we do see. Do you see a sustainability that wouldn't be there in another kind of home?
Oh, certainly. When you consume less materials, when you build it with the environment in mind, you end up with a home that is more comfortable, the air is fresher, there's more durability, less maintenance. All of these things combine to consume energy and consume our time and cost. And when you take all of these things in mind, put them into a home, the home is going to be more comfortable, last longer, and, you know, just be more respectful of the environment.
And these tiny houses are making people ask questions about the homes that they live in. Do you think that asking those questions is going to lead more people into the direction of living more sustainably?
I think Jay and Greg point out a beautiful idea, a wonderful question. You know, how much space do we really need to be comfortable? You know, I think we need to ask ourselves that question and be allowed the freedom to make our own decision on that.
And Jay, I'll let you have the last word as the person who started this whole movement. Where do you see it going? What do you want to see in the future?
Oh, I just, I'm really happy with the way it's gone so far. It's going mainstream now, documentaries and TV shows and whatnot all of a sudden. And I just hope it, I think maybe the McMansion was a trend and that small houses, you know, it didn't start with me, of course. Nothing comes out of nothing. And I think that smaller homes are on the rise, and I hope that continues.
Jay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jay Schaefer is the founder of the Small House Movement. He's the owner of Four Lights Houses and the author of the Small House book. Greg Johnson, thank you.
Thank you. Good to be on the show.
Greg Johnson is president of the Small House Society and lives in Iowa City. And Don Otto, thank you.
My pleasure.
Don Otto of DPO Construction in Iowa City. He is a green builder. We've been talking about small houses this hour, and with me now is Ben Kiefer, host of River to River. What's coming up on that show today?
Hi, Charity. We're going to be talking about elder financial abuse over the noon hour, and specifically one case to start off the hour, Jim Ruby of Eldora. His sad story of how a caretaker took advantage of his trust and drained several $100,000 of his retirement. We'll find out, of course, how to prevent this as well.
All right, River to River today at noon. Thank you very much. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.